And in that junk, I had some of the original two-track, the original two-inch recording tape. And it had sat here down with me for years and years. And so one day, I got it, took it down to a studio. I got it digitized, and I brought it over to John Pavletic, who doesn't live too far from me. So, John, you know, what do you think about listening to this stuff and seeing if we can't get this thing remixed and sounding good? And, well, he went after it like a rabid dog. And he spent a good part of last year working on making this record sound utterly fantastic. And that's kind of what happened.
So talk to us a little bit about how recording an album in the 1970s differs from 2019 and how this came together in terms of what he did with the originals.
Well, of course, in the 70s and not too long ago, really, just in the 90s, everything was recorded onto tape. And as you know, everything now, I mean, I have a recording studio in my basement. It's all digital with Pro Tools and some nice gear, and you can do everything by yourself. So, unfortunately, many great studios have gone by the wayside. But back then, you pack up your gear and head out to the studio and take after take, you know. Hey, it doesn't sound so good. Take it again. Do it again and do it again until you get it right. But now, in Pro Tools, you can do it once, and you can fix it right there on the screen.
Yeah, that is kind of the nice part of it.
Length and adjust things, and that's what I do. That I kind of like it.
So why now? I mean, why is it, you know, you decided to say, hey, I've got this stuff.
Yeah.
Let's digitize it and sort of re-release it to everybody.
Well, you know, it wasn't like a planned thing, really. I didn't think of something, well, I'm going to do this next year or the year before or anything like that. It was just I had the tapes and I took them down to John's place, and he started work on them, and they started to sound. He of course has put. He has a fabulous Pro Tools studio, so he made everything sound just absolutely great. And then I contacted Marty Scott, who is the owner of Gem Records, who. We signed with Pez Band, signed with them with Gem in the 70s, Passport Records, and Marty was interested in releasing it. So, I guess that answers why now. Well, Marty said, why don't we do something together? And Marty said, you know, let's put this thing out. And so we started working on it in January. And it went very fast, really. And there it is. Now it's in your hands.
Yes, it is. And I've had a chance to listen to it. Some absolutely great stuff in there. Now, I will admit.
Thanks.
And I'm not trying to make you feel old or anything.
Well, yeah, that's all right. I am, you know. But that's okay.
When the album first came out, cover to cover, I would have been 5 years old. So. But I have,
so,
as I've sort
was
of
your mom taking you to Lake Fred for a dip?
Actually, I'm not a Jersey original. I'm not a Jersey boy. I originally grew up in Minnesota.
You sound like Midwestern.
Yes.
You don't have a Jersey accent.
Nope. I've only been here a couple of years, but I will admit, as I've grown up and I've really gotten into the music from the 70s and 80s, I've really enjoyed sort of the stuff that they call power pop. And so listening to this album, there was a lot of stuff there that I really, really enjoyed listening to. There's some great, we just played Back in the Middle, which I think is a really good tune. And I've gotten into a lot of the power pop bands. In fact, one of my favorites is a band that got together not too far down the road from you guys in Zion, Illinois, a band called Shoes that was together about the same time.
Yeah.
So how did, for those people that may not be aware of the history of Pez Band, how did you get this group together?
How did we come together?
Yeah.
Well, we started, the three of us, Nick, Mike, and myself, we started as a little jam band in high school. And then from high school, we started playing out in little clubs and pizza parlors and places like that. And we played for beer and pizza.
Nice.
And it just kind of snowballed from there. And then into the early 70s, it kept rolling and rolling, went through singers and other band members. And finally we started going out east. And once we started going out east, things started rolling a lot more for us. And we eventually signed with Passport, with Marty.
And how did that come about? So how did the band end up running into Marty Scott and eventually signing a contract?
I think the management we had at the time, a fellow named Mike Lembo, he knew some different people and some smaller labels, and of course we tried bigger labels like Epic and Capitol and some other ones, but they wanted something. They didn't offer very much money. Of course, nobody was offering very much money back then to do a record because it was tight, so you only had a limited amount. But Passport seemed to be the right fit. I guess it was all about the fit. And so Passport and their sister label, which was I'm blanking. I guess it's too early in the morning.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Passport and Jem and the Talking Heads were on that label.
Okay, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to look it up.
Well, you were too young. You were 5 years old.
I was too young, exactly.
So, I mean, you know, what? So anyway, that's kind of how, I guess, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that does.
And, how do we get on there? Well, it was the right fit. It was the right time. And, you know, we were dying to be signed, and that's what happened.
Absolutely. Now, let's, I know you've, Cover to Cover is the album that you just released, but I'm sort of curious with your first album, which was called Pez Band.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, by reading the one sheet, Clarence Clemons helped you out with that album. How did that come about?
How did that happen? Well, it happened. We recorded it at the House of Music in New Jersey. The studio was called the House of Music in New Jersey, and the studio was owned, if I remember right, by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, okay.
So all his guys were there. The producer was Stefan Gelfas, another Greek fella like myself, and all the guys Marty knew and Stefan knew, and they were all like studio musicians. So Clarence Clemons was one of them. These guys played on a lot of stuff. So they got the Brecker brothers in there to play horn, and of course this was all very. You know, we were more like a hard pop band, but you know, they put this gloss on us with saxophones and trumpets and strings and flowery stuff. And when we first heard the mixes, we were like shocked, but didn't really care for it so much. But people seemed to like it, and of course, we had to roll with it because we didn't have a choice. But that's how Clarence Clemons got on the record. He was a giant. Fellow with a giant personality and a very warm and nice fella. And I met him very briefly, but yeah. We also used another horn player called John. His name's John Payne. And he was managed by our manager, Mike Lembo. So we had all these people coming in and salt and peppering the album.
Cool. Well, that's great. We're talking with Mimi Batinas, Mimi guitarist and lead vocalist. For a late 70s, early 80s power pop band called Pez Band, they have just released or are re-releasing a remix of their 1979 Cover to Cover album should be coming out here, I think, in the next couple of days, April 5th, I think.
April 5th, yeah. It's dropping. That's the release date.
Wonderful. So, again, back to sort of the 70s when you're sort of hitting your stride, releasing albums, you're going on tour. What's life like in Pez Band at that time?
At that time, I tell you, we were on top of the world. It was January. We finished that record in January of 77. By May, we were playing the ABC National Record Convention and got picked as most group to be a successful group of the 70s. We toured. We played. We opened for Fleetwood Mac. We opened for Supertramp, Rush. We were all over the place. It was very busy. And then by November of that same year, we were on a DC-10 headed to London to make the second record. So it was a whirlwind. It was a really great year. 77 and 78 were really quite good. By the time 79 came around, things started to wind down a little bit, and I forgot to tell you that we had moved out to New Jersey to be closer to the record label and to our management. They were like, the management was located in New York City, and of course Marty was right there in Jersey. So we had a little rented home in West Orange, New Jersey.
Okay.
And so we were in access to the whole the Northeast, the New England. And we played all over the place, Boston, up and down. We were very busy. And that's how it was back then.
Great. And then you mentioned maybe other than your home of Chicago, it really sounds like you spent a lot of time here in New Jersey. What do you remember of spending time here?
We really enjoyed the East, especially the accents, you know, to interview. Are you going to make an interview? See, you and I, Chad, from the Midwest, we say interview,
yep,
right?
Exactly.
Interview, not an interview. But you can't call the starter on the train. What's the starter? What's the conductor?
Yeah, there are some differences, yes.
Those are some of the things we liked out there. And hoagie sandwiches were great.
Oh, absolutely.
Beers were cheap. And, you know, a nice thing about Jersey for a young rock band like we were back then was that every bar had a grill. You know,
okay.
It had a little hamburger thing where you get hot dog or hamburger. So, you know, for $4 or $5, you get a couple of beers and a burger. Back then.
Those were the days, right?
That was very convenient for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely, I bet.
Not like now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not like now, that's for sure. So the band sort of lost steam in the early 80s. Was it just due to, you know, spending so much time together? Or what
well,
happened that sort of...
had kind of run our gamut.
Mm-hmm.
We did a good 10, 12 years together, just about. And after we lost the record contract, we had moved back to Chicago by 79 and playing some clubs around here and just not drawing like we had in the past, because we had packed clubs here in the past for many years. But there was competition. You know, the disco world was very big, and the punk world was very big, and we didn't do any of that stuff, so we were kind of left out on a limb there, and that's kind of what happened. So I remember myself in particular being very disheartened and calling and saying, well, you know, I'm not going to go and play in a club with just three people. So I think I packed up my stuff and I went to Los Angeles for a year. I had a friend out there, and I tried my luck as a hired gun out there. And I played with some people, and But there again, it didn't work out as well either.
So really, after Pez Band sort of broke up in the early 80s, I mean, did you leave the music industry for a while, or have you sort of... Okay.
I did, yeah. Well, I went out to Los Angeles. We kind of reformed for a year, Mick, myself, and another fellow, John, and we made an EP, which was produced by another friend of ours from Oak Park, because we're all from Oak Park, Illinois. And we tried to get that. It had a little edgier, a little punkier sound to it, but it didn't fly. So my initial training out of high school was in art, in fine art. So I went back to art school in the mid-'80s, and I finished up my Bachelor's of Fine Art. I got a degree in fine art and in teaching art, and I got a job at the Field Museum in Chicago as a scientific illustrator. And from there, I started teaching art at Chicago Public Schools, and I was there for 22 years.
Wow.
That's it in a nutshell.
Huh. Kind of interesting that you spent time as a teacher. That must have been, especially in Chicago, that must have been an interesting time.
Yeah. That was kind of rough because I was in the inner city, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not the hard kind of person you really need for teaching the inner city Chicago kids. it was rough, but we had some good times. But the inner city Chicago is Chicago Public Schools is a tough place to be.
Now something I was not even aware of, but I found out again in doing some research and reading sort of your one sheet that was sent to me about the band is. You guys are in the Power Pop Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
What is that? What is that like?
That is just that just recently happened a few months ago, I think.
Okay. And so how did you find out?
We got this message from Aaron Kupferberg. Sorry, I'm not saying his name right. And another DJ, Carl Carafelli out of Rochester, New York, I think he is.
Mm-hmm. I do believe you're right.
He's a great fan, a wonderful guy. And these guys, you know, nominate us. We got on the roster there. And, of course, I'm waiting for the $1 million check. I check the mail every day. But all I get is a water bill.
I know. Don't you hate that?
I mean, it's such a drag. I said, you know, I talked to the mailman. I said, you know, I'm in the Power Pop Hall of Fame. Can't you give me something better than this?
Eh. Nah, I guess not, huh?
I'm still waiting.
There you go. We're talking with Mimi Bartinez of the band, the Pez Band. Album Cover to Cover, which was out in 1979. So basically, this is the 40-year anniversary of that album. It's going to be re-released on April the 5th. And... I guess, Mimi, the question I have to ask, which I'm not sure I was able to find out, are we touring to support this, or is this just something where you're going to do some radio interviews, talk about it a little bit, and then let people know what's out there?
Well, right now that is the immediate plan to do. I've got many interviews lined up, thanks to my friend Maureen out there. Hi, Maureen. And she's been setting up a lot of stuff, and my old friend Ida, she has been setting up some stuff for me too. And I have talked to Marty about coming out east and playing, but there aren't any solid plans for that because, of course, we need the cash, you know, to do something like that. But it's not out of the question. It's not right in the plan immediately right now, no.
I understand. It was just something I was interested in. If anything, for me, I'd want to be there.
Well, I'd like to have you there.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, it would be fun
to have a backstage pass.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. So, I mean, if it does happen and you're in the southern New Jersey area, I'll be happy to help in any way I can.
Well, it'd be great to play. You're at Atlantic City, right?
Yeah, just outside of at Stockton University.
Stockton University. And we could take a dip in Lake Fred.
There you go.
I mean, why is it Lake Fred?
I'm not sure how Lake Fred got its name.
Well, Chad, this is something you need to
I know.
To
I need
now.
To look
you
into.
You tell the, your listening audience.
I know. Somebody, my listening
like,
audience probably
Lake
knows better
Louise.
Than I do.
You know, this sounds a little more romantic. Let's take a dip in Lake Louise or Cherise. But Fred?
I know somebody out there knows the answer. It's not me, but yeah. I know somebody out there knows the answer. One more question I wanted to ask you before we let go about Cover to Cover is specifically, did you write all the songs on that? I mean, was there any song that you sort of enjoyed a little bit more than the others, or is that just kind of as a songwriter you kind of like? I mean, you wrote them all, so you kind of like everything sort of equally.
Well, I didn't write them all.
Okay.
I think there are a couple that I really like more than others, but we wrote together. Mick and I wrote some things, and Tommy and I, and I really liked Back in the Middle. That's one of my favorites. Another great song off that record is African Night, which Mike Gorman wrote, and a ballad, Didn't We, which was written by myself and Tommy and Cliff Johnson, and Cover to Cover, I mean, the title track there, that one was written pretty much by Mick, another good song. So those are some of my favorites. Oh, and another one that I really love was Hero, Hero.
Okay.
I thought that turned out quite well. The vocal track sounds really good.
Well, great.
So those are my my picks for today, at least.
For today. It could change tomorrow, but that's for today, right?
Yeah.
Well, Mimi, I do want to thank you very much for your time. It was great to be able to talk to you. I hope everything goes well with this Cover to Cover re-release, which you will be available April 5th on Amazon and on iTunes.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck.
Yes, thank you very much. You have yourself a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Mimi Martinez right there, lead guitarist, vocalist for a 70s and 80s power pop band called Pez Band. We heard something to start off the show, one of the songs he enjoys called Back in the Middle. I also queued another one up, so why don't we play it? Another one that he says he enjoys. One here called African Night from Pez Band off their album Cover to Cover once again, which is remixed and will be re-released April 5th, available iTunes and Amazon. So let's do some African Night right here by Pez Band on the Midweek Slide with Chad Roberts on 91.7 WLFR.